Three witches in the woods of darkness settle down to release the pleasures of death.
Germany is my love, and the heavens above, I love to you, and I sing to the praises of Satan. The praises of Satan.
That was the best one yet.
Oh, that was good.
That'll might make a best of season 8.
Right?
The witches of darkness.
Yeah.
And the perils of hell. Oh,
here we go.
Hello.
Hello and welcome.
Good you know, to see you, Andy. It's been a minute.
It's good to see you, Nick. You know, when I was putting together the best of season 7, you sing German stuff virtually every episode, the beginning of almost every one of them. You're going, because I re-listen, not to every single second, but I had to go through the old, you know, a dozen or so episodes, and just about every one, you're, you know.
Well, doesn't it sound?
The woods of the darkness. Here we go.
Doesn't it sound like some kind of dark German, yeah, like
always.
In the land of German anarchy?
It's good that you pointed out at almost every one, almost every episode, because we could have new listeners. We could have new listeners. Repeat listeners are like, oh, here he goes again, you know? But new listeners.
Fast forward, Nick, because the German intro.
It's new to a new listener. They've never heard it before.
Well, that one, people are going to be like, that one. If they're a new listener and they just heard that, they're going to think we're fucking rad.
That one is, let me tell you, next Grammys, Jay-Z's going to get up and give a speech about that. How come this guy hasn't won an award?
Beyond Taylor, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but Nick Bankhead from Slash
that was
U.
Kanye.
But still, same thing.
Did you see the latest Grammys? Jay-Z got up. Oh, yeah. Jay-Z gave a little bit of a talk about, you know, Beyonce not winning Best Album. You know, she's however many awards for Best Song or something, but never Best Album. Like, he was pretty critical, and he's accepting an award, and he was pretty critical of them. I didn't watch it in all the great detail because I just think it's a bunch of people, you know, rubbing each other off. I think it's all dumb.
Literally.
If you like the music, you like the music. It's like, or if you don't like that song, you don't like that song.
Isn't he kind of, it's kind of broadsided in the sense that you're married to the lady you're speaking to.
Sure.
About.
Yeah. And it's just him, you know. Also, I kind of see it as a little ungrateful where he's accepting an award. Thanks for this award. Now, I'm going to tell you why your award system sucks. It's like, well, that's terrible. That's just,
now,
you come off as kind
I,
of ungrateful.
I don't watch,
know.
To those that do listen, that watch the Grammys, I don't. I couldn't tell you who won best anything.
Taylor Swift won a bunch of stuff. Miley Cyrus won her first one. You know, she's been nominated for several, and she finally won one.
Insane Clown Posse?
I don't remember them being up on stage at all. This was weeks ago.
Did Limp Bizkit ever win a Grammy?
I don't know. Neither. I don't know about Nickelback either. But my point in that whole thing was Jay-Z is going to get up and say,
oh, yeah.
This guy gave this, he sang along.
And he didn't get anything.
And he didn't get anything. It was great.
In the land.
It's called Slash U.
Of the dark woods.
Thank God.
Come the night.
It's recorded.
Hey,
let's hope we don't lose that file.
As you probably already know, we are your professors, Senior Nick and Senior Andy, and we love to bring you slasher horror movies from now and then, whenever. We love them all, especially when they contain boobs, blood, and body parts. It's the best. We spoil the whole movie. We're going to talk about it. We want you to follow us on Instagram. /U_podcast. Hit us up on the World Wide Web, /upodcast.com. And OnlyFans, /upodcast.
You can email us, /upodcast@gmail.
Well, hey, we had our first table read for Murder Cabin.
That's right. Your famous, infamous movie that you wrote.
Coming to life.
We're making Murder Cabin.
Got a great buddy from Geared Science, who is a cinematography genius. Who will be behind the lens. We're co-directing this bad boy.
Yeah.
Had our first table read as Andy as the depraved...
Father.
Sexual deviant father.
Right. Well, yeah. Sexual deviant's part of the character.
Part of the character, yeah.
Mostly he's just an abusive, psychologically abusive husband. It's terrible. Like, you know what I mean? He's physically abusive, sure.
Yes.
There isn't a ton of that in the movie, but I don't want to spoil anything, but he's more psychologically abusive.
Yeah, this is it's definitely a good sound, and there's some backstory to it.
It's fun.
We're having some fun. I was really excited as someone who's helping bring this together, seeing the actors, the cast come together. It's just a cast of four.
It has to be exciting for you to watch.
Yeah,
this thing that you wrote and you've loved for so long is now like being birthed.
And it really, for the first table read, I mean, both Brian and I even said how impressed we were. Like,
yeah.
I was really, like, we really didn't, well, the first table read students, we just were like, go with it, we're not going to say anything. And then after the first table read, we took notes, Brian and I spoke, came back, gave a little direction.
Yeah.
And then really did a second read through and didn't stop, really. I mean, there was a couple things where we would say, hey, read it like this way.
Yeah.
But it got powerful, second read.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And then for you slash you, super fans who remember our guest a while back at the beginning of season 7, Eric Hahn. He's working on it too. His son,
Professor, yes,
his Professor Hahn.
Professor Hahn, his son is playing Buddy.
Yeah.
So Andy's knockoff. Yes, yeah. It's and Eric will also be editing the film, coloring, colorist. He's
okay.
He was reading the actions. But again, I just wanted to make that announcement. Yeah. If you do listen, please follow murder_cabin_movie on Instagram. We are going to be keeping everyone up to date live on what's going on.
I'll get some info on that out on the Facebook and the website too. So.
But we are definitely getting stoked on this, and we'll keep talking about it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a blast to read. I told you, I felt like I took a test. You know, we just read through the script, just read the lines, but that second time through, used a little more expression and emotion.
But you do have to read those parentheticals.
But I was like in it.
Yeah.
Like, it was like I was taking a test. I was concentrating heavily. And so when we were done, I felt exhausted.
Yeah, well, that's good.
I was like, oh, my God.
Just think when we start moving.
This character is such an asshole. I was like, this is not me at all. I'm going to really have to flip my thinking, and then I'm going to come out of it and go, you know, I'll be buying flowers for Cheryl. Like, I got to counterbalance this guy.
You'll be like, clean those fish, Cheryl.
No, I can't.
Clean those fish now.
I won't be able to do it.
Make a guppies joke. Just kidding.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? I know we're going to, and I just want to go ahead and say this too.
Sure.
I wish some of you could fly to Milwaukee, but on April 10th, we're having a rad fundraiser.
Yes.
For Murder Cabin. We're going to be recording live again at the X-Ray, world famous X-Ray Arcade. Very famous X-Ray Arcade.
In Cudahy.
And we're going to be actually interviewing some of the cast. We're going, all of the cast, probably.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest, all of the cast. And we're going to be doing a table read, but we'll bring this to our podcast so people can hear it and get stoked too. Especially when we have to show off the Kickstarter. Can't do a GoFundMe.
Oh, really? It has to be Kickstarter?
Because you can't say, I'm going to give you something, which we are saying we're going to give you something.
Oh.
We're gonna, like, if you donate to
GoFundMe is strictly charity.
Yeah, you can't give away anything. So you can't say like, if you donate to my son's cancer operation, we'll send you a ribbon in honor of his. And it's like, really? Can you send a ribbon?
See, yeah, let me play Legal Eagle here. I think that once they start doing that, it becomes a marketplace rather than like a charity. You know what I mean? So maybe GoFundMe says, we're strictly charity.
Kickstarter makes more sense, though.
Yeah, you know, I suppose. So. But when you're getting money and then giving something in return, that's almost like an exchange, like a marketplace. And maybe that's what GoFundMe's getting at.
If you help me out with this movie, I, in turn, will give you a hand job.
Okay. That's recorded. Yeah. It's on the record. That'll never die.
I hope no one.
We're gonna put that on the internet, and it'll be there forever, friend.
Any professional form that knows me is like, Nick just offered a hand job to get his movie made.
Pretty much prostitution, holy right shit. There.
Anyway, hey, let's get into it, man. Yeah. We've been blabbing too much. Andy, we're talking about a movie from 2006, 1 hour, 31 minutes.
Behind the Mask: The Rise of Leslie Vernon.
Fun.
Lot of fun.
Much like we want to go and bring this up, much like Unmasked, right? Part 25?
Right.
And Axe Murdering with Hackley. Hackley, yeah. Thank you.
Well, because Hack, you know, yeah, Hackley. Hacking the Thanks. Axe. Yeah.
This one is the best one out of that kind of thing.
Out
of those three, because when we get into the Cliff Kill notes, I'm sure we'll make note of this. But again, much like Axe Murdering with Hackley, this one has a lot of nods to past slashers of yore.
Mm-hmm.
Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, Halloween, even Black Christmas. And I have to mention this, Andy.
Hmm.
Rad Van.
It does have a Rad Van. Nice VW
van.
Been
a while.
Yeah. It's been so long since we've gotten a good van.
Looks like a 67.
I saw one for sale the other day. Not a VW like this. It was another van. I think it was yesterday. on my way home from your house, we went and saw the Admirals hockey game.
Of course.
Go Ads. They won 4-2. It was amazing. And then coming home, there was a, it looked like an old, it was big blue, one of those tall, like, vans, almost like what they would drive, like, use for non-emergency medical transport.
Yeah.
It's one of those. Big, bright blue.
Did it have windows?
Tinted windows. And I was like, oh, that looks cool, because you could outfit it as, like, a camper almost.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what a lot of people do.
That's what made me think of a... So, anyway, another rad van example in real life.
So, glad to see... I'll love to see rad vans in movies. Rad vans! Especially on feet, rad vans.
Yep.
Get it? Because vans are shoes.
Yeah, I understand.
Okay.
Damn, Daniel.
Oh, yeah, the white vans.
Yeah.
God! What are they
damn,
up to now?
Daniel.
Probably inventing date rape drugs. Yeah, I don't know. Like...
It's the same kids who they're hanging out with the it's corn kid now. Remember that kid?
Yeah, you know, like I'm sorry, I know, like
it's corn.
We're probably gonna go off on tangents here, but that's fine.
What?
I have a question.
Sure.
It's so funny you brought this up because I was thinking about this. Do you remember on Twitter when the guy was like, "Yo, get me 1 million retweets and I get free chicken nugs for life from Wendy's"?
Okay.
Do you remember that?
Don't.
Well, it blew up because the highest retweet was something that Ellen had done. Ellen, the DeGeneres show.
Oh, okay.
It was the retweet of the selfie she took at Emmys or Oscars or.
Okay.
And it was Brad Pitt, Kevin Smith. Like, it was crazy.
So that held the record.
That held the record for the most retweets.
Okay.
So this guy was like, "Hey, Wendy's, what do I need to do to get free chicken nuggets for life?
Mm-hmm.
Get the most retweets."
Oh.
That's what Wendy said.
Perfect.
So he did.
So he set his mind to it, and he did it.
He was getting interviewed. I mean, it's becoming a big deal, and he did it.
Wow.
Where is he now?
I don't know.
Like, is he still trying to, like, go to cons and stuff? Like, hey, I'm the chicken nuggets guy.
I'm the retweet. Chicken nugget. I hold the record for retweets.
I mean, I just don't know.
That's where that.
You get, like, this viral.
Yeah.
Like, this viral, even more than 15 seconds of fame, which, you know, like, now it's, like, you know, 15 minute seconds or 5 seconds.
And you've done virtually nothing
to
further society,
to
benefit anyone else.
Yes.
Like, what did you do?
And he's probably still trying to bank on it. Hey, girls, remember me. I'm the chicken retweet.
He's at the bar.
I'm the chicken nugget retweet guy.
Can I buy you a drink? I'm the record holder of the most retweets.
You remember the Wendy's chicken nuggets?
The chick
I got some
goes,
t-shirts in the
isn't it called X now? I mean, Jesus.
That's awesome.
I'm convinced that this society, we're falling more and more into the movie Idiocracy every day.
Oh, 100%.
All the time. Go watch Idiocracy. Holds up. Because that's what we're becoming.
And Mike Judge is a genius. He like was.
Brilliant.
You talk about foreshadowing. That motherfucker
totally.
Was directing that whole thing, going, "This is just a whole thing." Time saying foreshadowing.
Yeah, he's the Nostradamus of foreshadowing. That guy.
God
that guy knew
damn.
What was.
If you have
happen.
Not, I mean, I know most of you. If the four listeners out there have listened to Idiocracy, seen Idiocracy,
yeah.
I mean, go watch it again. In fact, I think I'm going to go watch it again. I don't want to watch it again. I'm going to cry.
Was that a 10, 12 plus year old movie at this point?
Terry Crews and
yep.
Yeah, I mean, it's
Luke Wilson,
yeah.
Maya Rudolph.
Yeah, I think so.
From SNL.
SNL. I don't want to watch it again because, I mean, it would be funny if we lived in a...
Dax Shepard's in it, too.
In a fun society.
I'm busy, I'm baiting.
In a society that was, you know, like,
yeah.
Thriving,
mm-hmm.
but I feel like in a current American...
Right. We're not talking about Idiocracy today.
Yes, today we are talking
Behind the
about...
Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon.
In fact, this movie is like if Chris Hansen wanted to talk to serial killers instead of pedophiles.
Okay.
Oh, and he was a young girl. This is what that movie's like.
All right, I
you
get
know,
it.
You kind of get it?
I understand. Where
but,
are you going?
So there's so much to talk. Oh, one more question for you, Andy.
Sure.
If you could have a serial killer mask,
because
this mask and this for Leslie Vernon has a pretty cool mask.
He does, yes.
What would your mask be? Like, mine would be like, would it be like, I think I would be like an evil, like I would wear like a, I don't know. What would yours be? Do you know?
I was thinking that we have this devil head in the studio.
Yeah.
It might be something that takes some elements from that with maybe like a clown.
Ooh.
That's
fucking
you know,
rad.
Like the clown, the doll up
the,
here in the corner.
Doll, yeah. The old ventriloquist doll from like 1974.
I've always thought that something that looks maniacally happy is makes for some of the scariest masks.
Yeah, you're right.
You know,
there was that one, the drive-through burger one that we did.
Yes,
that was
called drive-through.
Yeah, drive-through.
Yeah.
Thank you, God. I can remember that movie.
Yeah, but like Pennywise the clown.
Yeah,
and It the newest the remake of It. I know it's not a mask, but that is some that face to Bill Skarsgård.
Yeah, Skarsgård.
an amazing job. Just the fucking maniacal smile. That gets me.
So. I think mine is like the playful, like anime, like, you know, like animation, like, so maybe like a,
oh, like a cartoony type.
Yeah. Like an evil unicorn, like with, ooh, an evil unicorn with fangs, dude. Yeah. That's it. That's what I would be. All right. An evil unicorn with fangs.
Well, hey, we're going to get behind that mask. Yes,
let's get behind that mask with Lovely Version as we jump in, to Andy's Clip Kill Little Notes, brought to you by Applesauce. Mm. If you want something tasty for dessert, or you want to call your partner a fun new nickname, choose Applesauce. And now, Andy's Clip Kill Little Notes.
Thank you, my little applesauce.
Hey!
All right. The Cliff Gill Notes, brief summary of the movie so you can follow along with us. This one's a good one to follow along or go out and watch it. I watched it on Amazon Prime. I think it was like $4 to buy. Directed by Scott Glosserman. Nice job, Scott. Killers like Freddy Krueger, Jason Voorhees, and Michael Myers are legendary names in the small town of Glen Echo. You see, in this movie universe, all of those killers are real, and the movies that we all know and love were actual events in, for the purposes of this film. A new killer named Leslie Vernon is dead set on joining those legends on the Mount Rushmore of slashers.
Good.
But Leslie needs to get his story off on the right foot if he hopes to become a household name that's simultaneously feared and infamously admired. So, he's invited a grad school documentary crew to follow him around, get a peek behind the planning, scheming, and preparation that all of our favorite slashers have to go through to make it big. Will the name Leslie Vernon end up spoken in the same company as Freddy, Jason, and Michael? Or has Leslie figured out a new approach to the classic slasher formula? Find out today on Slash U.
Little long, but that was one of your best intros ever.
Because I liked this movie. I wanted to give it
You really did. You really did. I could see you like taking some tissue to go watch this movie privately.
Like in a sexual way.
Sorry, that made me.
I just enjoyed it for what it was.
I liked it.
It's not gonna usurp the Mutilator, you know, but it's definitely in my top five.
I mean,
no.
Oh, is it?
I think so.
Wow.
Just because of its original.
Well, I mean, it was made before Axe Murdering with Hackley. I don't know if it was made before Unmasked, but I liked it, and it was enjoyable to watch. I was telling you at the hockey game that I was a little worried about how to discuss this movie.
Sure.
Because there are so many tropes that are discussed that are brought to life that you kind of find out the reasons why they need to do what they do.
Yeah, this thing holds up a mirror to all of the campy shit that we've watched.
It is. It's like, it's
here's how this happens.
It's an entertaining opening. Is kind of, we get it's almost an 80s nod to the setup, like, with our, it's set up like it's an actual horror movie, a waitress.
A scene from any movie.
Yeah. She goes out to, a waitress leaves, you know, the back door of her diner to go dump out the trash.
Yep.
And a spellbinding atmosphere. Is she being watched? Mm-hmm. She continues to take out the trash, but as she's at the trash dumpster, the door suddenly closes. Mm-hmm. Is someone watching her, Andy? We never know. We don't know, but we cut to the title card.
Yeah.
And then
she just freaks and runs around the front of the restaurant.
And that's where we meet Taylor, who's our reporter for University News. She's obviously like a grad school student.
She's doing a stand-up.
Yeah, and her crew, Todd and Doug, but they're in, like Andy mentioned, Glen Echo, Maryland.
Yeah.
And she's giving these interviews, or she's giving reporting about people within the slasher realm that, again, Andy brought up in Cliff Kill Notes. The likes of Jason Voorhees, Freddy Krueger, Michael Myers.
Right.
Great when they switch to Freddy's house. It's our boy, Kane Hodder, who played Jason Voorhees.
She's, excuse me, sir, can I ask you a few questions? And he just ignores her and goes
back
inside.
Special appearance by Kane Hodder.
Yeah, that's kind of funny. It was really neat because it's exposition, kind of telling us where we're at. She talks about Jason Voorhees and Camp Crystal Lake and on Elm Street.
On Elm Street, they show
murder.
The street. Yeah.
They were so traumatizing. Some people say just a dream about this killer can cause you to die. And it's like, oh my God, Nightmare on Elm Street. And then Haddonfield, Illinois, where Halloween won't mean the same to these residents.
Yeah, because it shows kids like kids are cowering. Their costumes.
Yeah.
Their costumes
in the house, afraid.
They're dressed up.
Yeah.
They still get dressed up, but they don't go up.
I don't want to go outside.
That is good.
Jason. Yeah.
And it really is kind of cool. and Axe Murdering with Hackley did this too, but more in a comedic way, which is this is a dark comedy.
Yeah.
But definitely Axe Murdering with Hackley was more comedy. But this is, it really is cool, like Andy mentioned, that these things really did happen.
We get the setup about this town, Glen Echo, where Leslie Vernon was a young boy taken from his home by an angry mob and thrown over the waterfall into the river. And some say that he didn't die, and now he's back to take revenge on the town that killed him.
Yeah, isn't they the townspeople killed him because they thought this boy was possessed by evil, right?
Yeah, because apparently the boy killed his mother and his stepfather.
Yes.
So that's why the town stormed the house and took justice into their own hands.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same kind of story you hear in so many other movies.
Oh my God.
They were upset, so they killed him, and now he's back for revenge.
The first story you hear about it, though, like where townspeople take revenge, in my opinion, is Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Where the townsfolks are like, we're going to kill this monster and only want to. And you know,
a commentary on people being afraid of what they don't understand.
The
monster's innocent. Yeah. He's just afraid of fire. He didn't do anything wrong. Yeah. He's just trying to exist. He was created. He didn't ask to be here.
That story makes me sad.
And the townspeople.
It's not scary. So why is Frankenstein using something like scary, like, ooh, like Halloween? Frankenstein's scary. No, Frankenstein's a gentle sweetheart who I want to kiss.
First of all, Frankenstein is the doctor.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. The monster. Yeah. I know. That's right. I love that guy, Jethro Tull. Is a band.
Frankenstein's monster.
No, I dig it, but...
And they're not the Foo Fighters. It's just Foo Fighters.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry.
Why do you drive on a parkway and park on a driveway?
I don't know. Who closes the door when the bus driver gets off?
Oh, they have a special lever under the door.
Oh, that one's answered. Great.
I just made that up.
More to come.
I sound smart. Like that guy. Never mind. She tells us, again, this is a story of Leslie Vernon.
Right.
And so she finally makes, they're like, check it out. We're going to interview this motherfucker.
Yeah.
So they make way to his house, and they're looking for him, you know, kind of like... Can we, you know, like,
it's so all handheld.
Yeah,
we meet
like kind of a Blair Witch. Yeah. And you kind of think like this is going to be kind of scary.
Yeah,
because like, they see figures move. And
it's the old trope. Things. There's a noise over here or a glimpse of something just out of the corner of your eye. Like, wait, did you see that? Wait, and they can't
see
find
the movement
him
in the window. But they eventually do catch up with Leslie Vernon. I love it. He's just a normal looking dude in his like early 30s.
He goes, like, hey, and they turn around. And he's like, I'm just messing with you. How you guys doing? I'm Leslie Vernon. he's like a normal guy.
Yeah,
right?
He walks him around the house, introduces them to his turtles, and like I'm gone from the house so much that it's so crazy that these little bastards just won't die.
Yeah,
he only keeps pets that he can eat.
Yeah, that's what he said. They're like, do you mind if we put a microphone on? He's like, yeah, sure. Like checking his mail. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah,
sure.
Just a normal like.
He's a well-adjusted. So far.
Smart. The guy smart who guy. Played the actor was brilliant in this. I'm
as
surprised
Leslie?
That we haven't seen him.
In more stuff?
More stuff, because I know that he did something in college where he was...
Nathan Basel? Basel?
Yeah, because, I mean, this is kind of only what he's really accredited for, but he did a really good job.
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
Comedic to getting dark. I mean, it was good. So
they, our crew is Taylor is our lead girl.
Yes, she's a Diane Sawyer, if you will.
Diane Sawyer-ish. She's worried she sounds too much like Diane Sawyer. And Todd and Doug are our camera and sound guys. They both have cameras and they both have mics, boom mics, but they use lav mics too. I'm going to get real technical, I guess. But no, that's it. It's a small crew, the three of them, Doug, Todd, and Taylor.
And they're just kind of looking around his house. They know he's got a lot of work-related books, Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah,
you know,
Anatomy,
like,
yeah, like textbooks and,
And Houdini and stuff. So the magic trick I thought was really funny.
That was cool because we've always talked about how killers can teleport. Well, it's just more of like a sleight-of-hand magician thing that they do. So he's been studying. He's like, this is the cool stuff we get to study. He's like, Taylor, do you have a deck of cards? And she's like, no, I don't. And it's Todd, do you have a deck of cards?
Why
he's
would
like,
I have a deck of cards?
Why would I have a deck of cards? He's check your front pocket. And Todd's like, holy shit.
You hear it off camera.
Yeah,
that's what makes it funny, the voiceover off camera. He's like, holy shit.
How'd you do that? And
he's like,
tricks of the trade.
Yeah, that was, I thought, see, it was started off really, like, to me, it was started off really funny, yes. And at the end, it got very funny. I started kind of, this is my cinephile douchey coming out, and I started thinking, like, the middle started kind of, okay, yeah. Let's pull it together.
You're a big-time director now, so you're going to look at these in a different way. You were cinephile douchey, now you're...
I'm a cinephile douchey.
I've directed a movie, and so I disagree with this.
It's not even, I haven't directed, it's not even done yet, so...
It'll be, you've started.
He wants to start explaining the process of how he kills. Right. So he takes her to his old cider farm.
Yeah, the old house. It was so funny. Taylor's just like, so, you know, who owns the place? He's like, it's in a trust now. I could come forward and claim it, but then everyone would know I'm alive.
Yeah, and I don't want that to happen.
I don't want that to happen.
Because on the anniversary of his death.
That's the, she explains. On the anniversary of his death, local kids dare each other to spend the night in the house. He explains that, you know, he's like, they can't see me mowing the lawn. So that's why he lives somewhere else way outside of town. And this is step one. He's got a location, an anchor. This is where the mass killing is going to take
place.
There
you go. On the night of a harvest moon.
Right.
They say, like, on the night of the harvest moon, the soil within the apple orchard, when you till it, it turns to blood.
Wet with blood.
Wet with blood. And on nights like this, you can hear my mother's body swinging from the trees.
And they all pause.
Y'all listen. No, I'm just fucking with you.
Like, we got like a month or so before the harvest moon. So
yeah, so that's what he does. So he trains, Andy. So he's got a month before before, you know, the madness. Yes, he's preparing, so he has to train. Cardio.
It's cardio. You can't believe how much cardio we have to do. You have to keep up when someone's running and you have to look like you're walking and still hang with them. Yes. And I'm like, that's so true.
People are like, I gotta run like a gazelle.
Yeah.
Walk like a gazelle.
So I mean, you can just imagine Michael Myers doing jumping jacks and burpees to get his cardio going.
I mean, exactly. Because I remember as a kid watching Jason Voorhees going, it was everyone, not just me, everyone asked, like, how does that motherfucker just walk? This person is running for their life, like, you know, eons, you know.
Well, there's a considerable stride difference, too, you know, with Michael or Jason being so tall. They're one step.
Their gait?
Yeah, their gait. The one step for them is probably the equivalent to somebody taking two or three steps while running. So,
I mean, they do. They. I guess if you walk with purpose, you can get anywhere faster.
We should see, man, it'd be awesome to, like, prank. Like, there's power walking competitions, like actual power walk races. Yeah. Prank it dressed up as Michael Myers or
just walk behind.
And just, you're walking really fast, like with your knife in the power walking competition.
I've seen, like, fun pranks they do, like, where, like, someone's jogging, and then, like, they'll, like, you know, just jogging in the park, and then they'll bring a whole mass of people behind the jogger, and so they look behind them, and there's, like, people with numbers on, and they're like, oh, my God, and then they look forward, there's, like, a finish line, then the person they're pranking crosses the finish line, like, oh, it's a trophy, and, like, they put
He's
on
like,
the
I wasn't even
green.
In a race.
Yeah, like, what the fuck's happening? When pranks were, like, nice and wholesome instead of, like...
Nobody got hurt.
Yeah, let me stick this, you know, doorknob up your butt.
So he does cardio. That's where we're getting at. He does cardio.
he has to scope out the school. Yeah.
This is step two.
Find
gotta get your victim.
Yep.
Right. So the girl is the key. But, you know, you got to have a girl. And they call it, we've always said final girl. A lot of people say final girl. They, in this movie, they call it the survivor girl.
Yep.
She's got to be a virgin.
Mm-hmm.
And she has to have a supporting cast. Good-looking athletic kids.
Maybe jocks.
A couple stoners. The survivor girl, virgin girl, ties them all together. They all hang out.
Yes.
In a rough crowd. That's your... He's already got a girl picked out, and...
Because it's no... It's
not the one they're looking at in this scene.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's also known within the horror genre that the final girl is pretty much a virgin.
Right.
You know, like, she...
Yeah.
She's wholesome.
Just about
she
all
wears
the time.
Like,
yeah,
she wears, like, little skirts. I mean, like, nice school... You know, like a schoolgirl skirts, really hot knee high socks.
But where they're at right now, they're looking at this crew and stuff. And Taylor's like, "So is that her?" And Leslie's like, No. This I just brought you here to show you like what I've been working with. I've already got someone picked out." And Todd's like, "You mean like those cooking shows where they already have a pie in the oven that's mostly ready?" And Taylor and Leslie just look at him, and he's like, "Sorry, never mind." You know, like the cameramen aren't supposed to speak up, but Todd and Doug always Chime in.
Add the very fun comedic
relief. You mean
relief.
Like those cooking shows for Perry?
Sorry, let it go.
Anyway, now the real deal. They meet Kelly Curtis, the actual girl.
They head to the restaurant where his obsession, Kelly, works. And remember the opening scene?
Yes.
They actually explain how it comes to life. And Taylor was actually helping.
Right.
I thought it was kind of neat because you don't really think of this. Because in horror movies, doors suddenly do close.
Right.
And in this one, they use a brick.
Brick tied with fishing line. Because
she uses the brick to keep the door open, so they just move the brick so the door can...
So all we see is a quick reenactment of the scene that opened the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know... But this was the setup for that. It was really neat to... Leslie told Taylor and the crew, she's off limits. You do not talk to her, Kelly Curtis.
Yes!
Do not go to her. You're going to fuck it all up. So yeah, this was all step three, is what Leslie calls a flyby, which is another, you know, common trope in the movies.
Exactly.
It's called a flyby. And it was just Kelly taking out the trash, thinks just she sees him out of the corner of her eye, and just to get in her head.
It puts the fear of God into her.
Yeah,
like, I mean, she's definitely scared.
Like, holy shit, there was a man out while I took the trash out. So
the next day, he introduces him to his best friends, Jamie and Eugene.
Yeah, we're going to meet.
Her husband is an old pro.
So these are like Leslie's like pseudo parents, more or less.
Yes, they're very, they take him on his wing.
Yeah, take care of him, give him advice.
Eugene is an old pro, but he's nowhere to be. Jamie tells him that he's not in the house, that he's in a decompression chamber.
Sensory deprivation tank.
Sensory deprivation tank. Thank you. Tomato, tomato. He's buried himself in the back, and it's kind of like that trope, right? Being dead.
He uses it to meditate. Yeah.
Yeah, but isn't it? He's an old pro, but you know, to me, it's always like a thing. Like, is he dead? Like, you could make yourself look dead.
That's why the slashers use it. They can control their bodily functions, slow down their breathing, their heart rate.
There you go.
And Gene, they dig up Gene and pull him out. He's like, "What time is it?" Like, I don't know, 6:30, 6:45. He's like, "Tuesday." Like, no, Gene, it's Thursday.
Holy shit.
Leslie's like, Jamie, you didn't tell me he's been in here for 3 days. And they get him up, stitched up, you know, or back up in the house.
Yeah, where he wants to tell him about his current project. And it's kind of like a wholesome family. This is where it's kind of funny because Eugene explains that the game when he was a killer is different nowadays. Like, you know, like they're just one-hit wonders like that go out and, you know, just hit one sorority.
I thought that was funny.
Yeah, they messed up the game.
Yeah.
Where guys like Jason, Michael, and Freddie took it to a whole nother level.
Yeah, they make a bloody mess of some sorority and they get killed or arrested. And he dices up carrots into really, really tiny pieces.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's definitely good with a knife.
Yeah, the end of the day.
I read in the IMDb's where that this was, I guess his killer was based off the killer from 1974's Black Christmas.
Okay, well, that makes sense. Because he talked about, it was back in the old days, it was all about numbers.
Yeah.
How many jobs can you get done in a week? But, yeah, he explains how they're in the business of fear. Fred, Jay, and Mike worked really hard to lift this whole thing to a whole new level, and they return over and over again, which changed the whole business. That's when Taylor says the business of supernatural killing sprees, and Jeans is like, no, it's the business of fear. Every culture and civilization has had monsters. For good to be pitted against evil, you need evil, and that's what we do.
Damn, that was really, that got me chill bumps.
Well, that's what he said in the movie.
And
that's
but you read it really well.
Part of why I liked it.
It was, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, the movie's good. There's just so much, it's so intricate, more than just, like, watching a dude run around and kill people. Like, this, they dive into some really, you know.
Dissect it for us.
Yes.
Yeah. They're doing our jobs, Nick. This is what we do.
I know, but it really is told very well because they are very interested to know how his story is going to continue as they're. As you know, they're saying goodnight.
His does he have his red herring ready?
Yes, which is
his first
kill, but it's really to put the fear of God into his obsession.
Kelly.
His Kelly, his final girl, his survivor girl. And so he's like, I was gonna start with her best friend, and they went, Don't do a best friend.
Turns the heat up too fast.
Yep.
Yeah.
They say, why don't you
Gene fucking knows his shit.
Yeah, he's what's something like she's you
does
know
she talk to a homeless guy every day? Or is there somebody
Well, she goes to a library, and the librarian lets her stay late so she can work. Well, there you go. Why not the librarian?
Kill the librarian.
Who is a librarian before we get to the scene? She's Our Lady, the
exorcist.
Exorcist from Poltergeist.
Yeah.
A little short. What the voice like? I can't hear. It's like me.
this house is clear. Yeah.
If it is right. Like this.
Well, it's that actress. She
said, yes.
So what Leslie's, this is our next scene. He's taking the crew to the library. It's late at night. Kelly's in there working, studying late. He's got a newspaper article that he needs to get into Kelly's hands. And it's about Leslie's mom and how she was raped by a man who is supposedly Kelly's great uncle. You know, so Kelly's supposed to learn here that she's related somehow to Leslie Vernon in some obscure way.
Yeah, or yeah, she's connected to
connected
him.
Connected to
there
him. Kelly's great uncle apparently raped Leslie's mom and birthed Leslie. And so it's all fake. It's an article that Leslie fabricated. Yeah. It's photoshopped. The photo looks enough like Kelly where she like, this guy's related to me. And it's just part of the article, and it's a printed copy. So he's going to plant it for her to stumble upon. And Leslie proceeds to explain what's going to happen. Here, she's going to find it. She's going to go to the librarian. The librarian's going to say, let's go check the microfiche. He's already altered the microfiche to reflect the same article. And then the librarian's going to say, don't worry about it. It's just a story. It didn't really happen. He's going to pop up, boom, kill the librarian, chase Kelly around for a little bit, but ultimately let her go. That's his plan.
Yes, and the plan is brilliant because it is the perfect story that's usually in every, again.
It like goes said, that way in so many movies.
But my question comes to life here. My question yes. comes to life here. Why does the crew stay? They know that the librarian is going to die.
Yeah.
I don't understand why they stay.
Stick around.
Because to me, that's the conscience of like, okay, well, we're actually going to see someone die. Mm-hmm. They still go with it because he does. He takes it into action, Andy. He puts the plan into action.
And it goes just exactly like he said.
But
yeah.
I love how the scene changes. And it changes
this
into
this is another thing that made me so pumped about this movie. We break away from handheld camera documentary style
to a film.
Like real life. Yeah, and that's like the real life
yes.
view of this universe.
It's like
we're in a movie.
Yes, it is now professionally. You hear the tone.
Your music. Yep.
She walks up. It's like the light,
you got
the filters.
You crane yes. shots on the camera.
Coming in.
Yeah.
So she gets in the library and the plan gets into action. And it's just like, Leslie
plays
said.
Out just like Leslie said. Kelly finds the newspaper article, asks the librarian. She goes, let's check the microfiche. She says, it's just a story.
But we did not mention Doc Halloran.
Yeah. You can hear Doug talking to Todd on the walkie-talkie. Like, hey, Todd, it's Doug outside. Some dude just pulled up, and that was all we heard. But then in the library, the librarian's telling the story about Leslie Vernon and how,
yes.
you know, it's not true, but the townspeople threw him over the waterfall, blah, blah, blah. And then suddenly there's Leslie behind the librarian. Ah! Kelly screams. The librarian gets sliced. And as she falls, there's a man there going, Leslie, holding a gun at Leslie. Leslie, time to put it down.
It's,
stop.
It's our Dr. Loomis.
It's Doc. Yeah, but his name's Doc Halloran.
Doc Halloran, played by?
Played by,
Robert England.
Robert England, Freddy Krueger himself.
Yes.
He's
but
there.
He is definitely even dressed. They made his wardrobe to look like
yeah,
Dr.
Long
Luba
trench,
trench
coat. Yeah. And he takes a shot at Leslie, hits him in the shoulder, and chases Leslie off out of the library.
But I don't understand because when they left her, that's. Excuse me, I'm not sick. I don't know why I have the sniffles. I apologize, students.
You're crying over the beauty of this movie.
They run outside because, you know, of yeah. course, the goal was to let Kelly live, and then he runs off, and they run to the van, and everyone's excited. Did you get that? Did you get Doc Halloran?
Yeah,
I got
Leslie's
my Ahab.
Like,
I got my Ahab.
He's an Ahab, yeah.
So
I
don't
think this was unplanned.
Yeah, but I don't understand why they're happy because someone died.
Yeah.
A librarian died. They don't get a conscience until they actually, like, start when the...
Can't explain that part.
Okay.
I mean, have you ever watched National Geographic where there's documentaries about, you know, drug trafficking and they interview actual drug traffickers?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're interviewing guys who are committing real crimes. It's the same type of thing, I
yeah,
guess.
But they don't get a conscience until later.
But in this universe, the killings are just something that happened for real, and I don't know. This crew somehow agreed.
Reflect on that as
yeah,
we dive
this crew
in a little
somehow
bit more,
said,
but,
okay, Leslie, we know you're going to go commit murder. We're going to follow you around for it. I don't know.
Yeah, everyone's excited about this Ahab. They have to tell Eugene.
Yeah, they take the footage to Gene and Jamie's house.
Again, Ahab is a reflection of everything that is good. One who's going to defend the others against evil. And that is what Dr. Halloran is.
Leslie explains that Dr. Halloran visited him as a kid. He's a psychiatrist who knew that one day Leslie would come back to terrorize the town, and that's what he's there for, to stop him. He knows Leslie's plan, and he wants to stop
him. But he can't tell anybody.
Because, no, he can't.
Because he's got a restraining order against him?
We're going to find out. Yeah, that's in the next day.
Oh, I'm sorry, but I still want to. I don't understand. Like,
it's a kind of a weak reason, but
again,
for the purposes of this movie, it works.
The next day, Todd, Doug, and Taylor decide to visit Kelly. They decide to do something they were told not to do.
Yeah,
they go to the diner where she works, and
Todd even says, "I want to go on record. I'm very against this."
Yes, and they go into the diner to kind of hide in the camera, but it's definitely on. And Kelly approaches the table, obviously freaked out. She is like,
she looks like she hasn't slept.
A ghost. Like, and
she's like, hello.
Looking around her surroundings constantly.
I'll be back to take your order.
Yeah, and
suddenly,
Dr. Holleran is in the diner watching them, and he was kind of curious about their interest in the girl.
Yeah.
And there he goes up to them and says, you know, Leslie's not who you think he is.
Yeah, you know where he is, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah, and he's not who you think he is. He's from Reno.
His name's Leslie Mancuso from Reno, Nevada.
Not the boy who died,
Andy. He's not Leslie Vernon, the boy who died.
So this is my favorite scene.
And they excuse him. They're like, okay, let's leave, goodbye. And when they walk out of the restaurant, Leslie's leaning against their van.
Yeah, I love this
scene.
And he
just says, Taylor, can we pretend we've already had the conversation we're about to have? And she goes, Leslie, and he's like, that's your portion right there. And he grabs her and shoves her against the van.
Yeah, but then she starts talking to her. Yeah, but then when she mentions Reno, he gets really pissed and he shoves her head against the van.
Yeah, he grabs her by the neck. Yeah,
and then that is like, he's like, I thought it was a great scene because not only a little push, but then when she mentions Reno and Nevada, he just like pushes her head against the van, like saying, like, listen, you know, you wanted to be a part of this. You know, you got to follow what I'm going to do.
Like, yeah, you asked me if you could follow me. He's like, it's not going to change what I'm going to do, whether you're here or not. You can leave. I'm still going to do what I'm going to do. But don't fuck up my life's work, is what he tells her.
Yeah, I know we're still, I want to go ahead and just jump a little bit. I'm wondering about this Doc Holleran still. I mean, if you got
that's what they do in this next scene.
Yeah, but he's a psychiatrist from Reno who treated Leslie. And did he set him up to take part in this facade? Did he say, like, you had to do this? Or is Dr. Holleran doing it on his own free will?
I think so. That's what I took from it.
Okay.
Yeah, it was...
Because he is excited about the Ahab. Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, because in the next scene, Taylor just calls him out. Like, you're not even from Glen Echo. You're from Reno. And he's just like, fine, I'll tell you everything you need to know. Yeah. And that's when him and Taylor are sitting talking casually. Leslie thinks he's off camera. But Todd or Doug is like hiding out of the room, like peeking through a crack in the door, you know?
Yeah.
Taping it and... Leslie's explained that he's not from Glen Echo. He is from Reno, but he knows the story of Leslie Vernon, and he's decided to adopt it, and he's going to make that his legend. Doc Holleran is a psychiatrist who treated him for who knows what when he was a kid, but knows that he's still off the rails. And that's when Taylor's like, why didn't he just call the police? He said, well, I kind of cornered him. I put a restraining order on him, and if he comes anywhere near me, he gets arrested too, which I think's weak. A little weak.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem to sound right, but
I gotta be like, he could
that's
say
the reason it, they give. Maybe the laws are different in this universe. We don't know.
You could have said something more like, I would have said that he diddled me when I was a little boy or something. Like, while he
treated
me,
but he also stuck his penis in my butthole. Or so if he turns me in, I turn him in.
That would have, but I mean, I'm not trying to sound gross or gnarly like I usually do in every episode, but that would make more sense.
Well,
as depraving as it is, that would make more sense.
So I think in this context, I do think it's true that Leslie Mancuso is Leslie Mancuso pretending to be Leslie Vernon.
Of course.
That part's true. And I think that maybe Doc Holleran is actually a guy who's trying to stop Leslie. He knows that he's a danger.
And I think that's why he gets so excited that he's actually got a real Dr. Loomis after him.
He probably wasn't looking for it, but he knows it's now that it's there, him and
maybe
he's really
pumped. Kind of planned for it.
Yeah.
Anyway, the next day, everyone's at the Apple Orchard where the murderous night is planned to happen.
Right. And the crew, we should mention that. The crew decided... We'll stay with you.
They decide to see this through.
Let's see it through, right.
And this is where we learn the setup of the story, Andy, how the night is going to go down, how each kill is going to happen, and he's going to make it happen.
Yeah, this is the part where you thought it kind of was more of an interview.
Yeah, the closet where he hides is much like the womb, a place to feel safe, alive, or where you hide. So it's kind of brought up, so you're pro-life, and he doesn't answer the question. But the bedroom is where it's all going to start. I mean, he really starts to break down the scene.
That was funny.
Those crazy scenes like that happen like in the murderous cabin, like in any slasher movie. how, like, the horny couple goes off, how the stoners or the drunks kind of go their own place, like, how, like, the group kind of separates through the night.
Yeah.
And that's when the Killers can take place.
He says, you got to keep track of everybody. Nobody gets away. If you mess that one up, it's a breakdown of the whole thing, plus it's really embarrassing. Yeah, so he's, I'm going to be hiding in the closet. One guy's going to bring his girlfriend upstairs to have sex. That's where it all starts. You kill them. You stage it like they're sleeping in the bed so that the bodies don't get discovered too early and cause a panic too early. You just make it look like they're sleeping if someone comes in. He also rigged the main fuse of the house, cut the power via remote control. He's got a little button that he can push and all the lights go out, which is awesome because it's like, is that what they all do? Is that what Jason...
He needed to do something with a weather pattern, though, too, like where it starts to rain. Like lightning and thunderstorm, but anyway.
He's like, I checked the forecast. It's going to be thunder. So he's like, once the power goes out, they're all going to go for the flashlights in the kitchen. I've replaced all the batteries with dead batteries, so the flashlights won't work. He's also disabled... By now, he's disabled their cars, so they can't drive away. He says a couple of them will go to the basement to check the fuse box. But it'll be a guy who goes, and hoping to get lucky, he'll bring a girl. They'll go to the basement. They'll turn on the lights, and they'll start making out. We see some boobs in this, because while he's explaining it to Taylor, it's, like, happening. It's like Ocean's 11. Like, here's what we're going to do.
Yes,
and you actually
good
see
call.
It.
Yeah, like,
yeah, you
hey,
see it
so
happening.
Like, ding, ding, ding,
right.
Ding.
So they're, the couple is making out. We see some boobs. Taylor's like, oh, Leslie. And he's like, come on, relax. Who's telling the story here? You know,
yeah,
so,
like a really close-up of boobs.
Then the lights go out again. And when they come back on, or they go out, the guy goes to check it out. And when they come back on, he's dead. That girl in the basement starts screaming, and she's the starting gun. She's going to run upstairs.
He lets her
live.
Oh,
my God, Pete's dead. Oh, my God. So he lets that girl live. He'll hide that body in the shed, which is a safe haven. Only Kelly can go in the tool shed later. Anyone else who goes in the tool shed, they're going to get it with a post hole digger.
Yep.
Foreshadowing. And we see in his story when Kelly goes in the tool shed, it's a pivotal moment when she starts to turn a corner into empowerment. It's symbolic. She's empowering herself with cock.
Yeah, this because the whole point of this, I'm going to keep going on the story. It's great. Yeah. The whole point of this is to whittle it down to just Kelly.
It's got
to
be Kelly and Leslie. And Taylor doesn't buy this. Like, what do you mean empowering herself with cock? He's like, think about it. Go back, research all the women who survived all those other events. None of them did it with a dinky little gun. They grabbed an axe or a shovel or something phallic. And she's like, so you're not only pro-life, you're a chauvinist.
I thought that was good.
And yes, he says, ultimately, Kelly will reach for my weapon because she'll be taking my manhood and empowering herself with it.
Yes.
So he's rigged all the tools, though, in the tool shed. He cut the axe handle so it'll really only survive one swing before it breaks. He loosened the sledgehammer head so that'll break. The pickaxe, he whittled that down so they only get one good swing and the tool breaks. He says he talks about how, let's just hope it's not a lucky swing. You know?
Yeah, this and it's great. That was well said because instead of us going back and forth, like that was...
Yeah.
If you need to, rewind that. That is exactly how it's set up.
Well, then they talk about the exits.
Because they also talk about, though, Taylor brings up, it seems like cheating. What you're doing. And she's like, he's like, no. It's preparation.
Statistically, I'm at a disadvantage here.
Yeah.
I'm one guy and there's eight of them. This is all preparation. He talks about the windows on the lower floor. He's nailed them all shut. Taylor goes, how come they don't just smash them out? And he goes, you know, you'd think they would, but they don't. He's like, the windows that they smash out are always on the second floor. And he said, up on the second floor, you smash out those windows, and you come outside, and you're on the roof. You're screwed. I've cut all of the major branches off of the trees.
So they can't climb down.
And all of the smaller branches, I've cut them most of the way. So as soon as you step on it, you fall. He's like, so he's rigged all the trees for climbing out. But I just thought it was really funny when he just said the lower windows are all nailed shut.
They would.
And she's like, why don't they just smash them out? And he goes, you'd think they would, but they never do. Which is, again, just... Let's go back and watch any other movie. And like, how come they don't just smash that window?
Yeah.
The window's stuck. Just fucking smash it. But anyway.
But isn't this where the scene comes to life? Like where they're showing it, what he just explained. They're showing it from a cinematic viewpoint.
Yeah.
An actual movie, so cinematic.
Yeah, while he's explaining everything, it's still doing the Ocean's 11 cutaway of what's really going to happen.
Yeah, because the stoners...
Right.
The two kids they discover are dead. So the stoners, Kelly and her boy toy, try to escape.
They're gonna freak out and go out to the car.
Yeah,
it won't start. That's when he kills the kid who's trying to start the car. He walks Taylor throughout where it goes next, because if they can't start the car, they won't run back in the house. They'll run to the barn. And in the barn, he's got more bodies hid, assuming she just says, like, assuming they'll run to the barn. He's like, no, they will. There's no assuming.
She takes
it'll
us
happen.
Over there, doesn't she? She's like, do you think...
go over to the barn.
And he's like, what? Do you know what's going to happen next, Taylor? Right. She's like, yeah. Right? Isn't this where she kind of takes over the story?
Yeah.
And she's like...
Pick them off one by one in the barn.
Yeah, and he's like, wait, didn't you forget something?
Dr. Halloran.
So they kind of rewind it, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. He'll show up.
Yeah.
And they'll have their showdown.
Of good and evil, but eventually Dr. Halloran will die.
And then it'll be only Kelly left.
Yeah, and then like she'll run off into the orchard.
The orchard.
Orchard. Take orchard.
Yeah.
Come on.
It's pronounced orchard.
Orchard. Where she has to take control.
If the closet represents the womb, what does the orchard represent?
The birth canal?
Correct. Wow, way to go, Taylor. You're getting this.
Kelly has to take control of her own destiny.
She's being reborn into a survivor, hell-bent on revenge. And I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ, this is so appropriate. There's so many other movies where that happens, where the female character goes from, you know, wimpy little girl who is afraid of a mouse to... I'm going to fucking kick your ass.
All the time.
It always happens.
They're dirty. They take off half their clothes.
We saw it happen in Hatchet.
Yes.
We saw it happen. You've seen Jamie Lee Curtis do it in Halloween. I mean.
Every movie you see. I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Right.
Like, I mean, you see, like, they're like, I'm a little girl and I have boobs.
Right.
To the door, like, come and get me. Come let's go, me. Motherfucker.
Yeah.
You know, so.
He's not wrong.
The night is set. We get one more visit from Eugene and his beautiful wife, Jamie. And Taylor says, do you have any... advice before...
Taylor says, how does one survive an encounter with someone like Leslie?
Never hang out with a virgin.
Yeah, Jamie's just like, don't hang out with a virgin. Gene says, run like a motherfucker. Don't stop till the sun comes up. Don't hide. Don't try to fight. Pick out a clear spot ahead of you and run straight and don't look back.
Yes.
That's how he would get away.
Yeah, exactly. It's great. You know,
I thought it was funny how Jamie goes like, I wasn't fast. I was fast, wasn't I, Gene? And he's like, you sure were, but you caught me.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That was funny. Eugene's wife was actually someone he was probably trying to kill.
Yeah.
And so she got away, but, you know, now they're together in real life.
Yeah.
So the night is set. Leslie starts to put on his preparation H. It's a formula of fire retardant to keep his blood vessels down and his cheek from
swelling.
Swelling.
If you get hit, it stops swelling. Fighters use it, he said. Yeah. But he mixed in his own fire retardant, like you said. Yeah.
So just in case, like, you know, the moment's
preparing, like, for getting punched or
set on fire.
Or hit or set on fire.
And one moment before the night begins, Leslie starts to cry because he is so happy. This is his Christmas. He truly loves what is about to happen. It's a very special moment between Taylor and Leslie as he's just kind of reflecting on this night that's about to happen. As Taylor grabs his hand to kind of comfort him, he kind of...
There's a moment.
Yeah, and he's like...
Yeah. He says his fate and longevity depend on what Kelly does.
Yep, so he...
And she's just like, yeah, you're trying to kill her. You love her, don't you? And he's like, I love the idea of her, of what I hope she'll find within herself.
It gets cinephilely deep here.
Yeah, he's just like, I'm so happy.
He wants to take one more look around to make sure everything is in proper order before the night begins, so he excuses himself, leaving Taylor and the crew to themselves. And we kind of just cut to the night. The beginning. He crawls into this window and... Where the crew is hanging out.
Taylor and Doug and Todd are in there.
They're in the closet.
Closet. Or a neighboring room,
Yeah, and he's got spark plugs because he's like...
Yeah, I don't feel like getting run over tonight.
Yeah. He doesn't want the cars to start.
Right, so he's got their spark plugs. Yeah. And he's like, okay, there's 8 kids in the house. They're downstairs getting sauced on beer and vodka. Kelly's not drinking, of course.
Yeah.
And he's all ready to go. They're... He's just like, the jock kid and his cheerleader girlfriend should be on their way any minute. You guys ready? And they're like, yeah, they're all psyched up, ready. And of course, then we hear the kids coming into the next room, make it out. And you hear him start. And Leslie says, I like to give him a moment to just get going.
What a great way to die.
What a great way to die,
sorry,
right?
Yeah.
I mean.
Because you can hear the sounds like.
How many times have you and I pointed that out? When we've covered a kill that happened while in the middle of sex, how we've said, hey, there's worse ways to die, right?
I mean, I guess if you know that, like the last moment of your life,
even said, what if you're like mid-orgasm and you just get fucking an axe through your chest?
Well, Andy, I mean, it's called the carotene. Like, people still, like,
It's called the carrot
heel. It's like
that's
I heard
choking.
But no, but I heard. But that's. I mean, I hear like it's like a great like.
Okay.
Like you never could come back and obviously tell people like
it was awesome.
It was awesome. Yeah, like dude, I was dead. Having an orgasm and yeah. I died.
Right.
Like I got stabbed and it was the greatest fuck. Like that. Oh God. That's right. I bet it's a great feeling.
Well, the kid, the bed's squeaking next door. Leslie's just like puts his mask on. Says time to dance with the devil, and the documentary crew stays put. And we hear Leslie murder the two teens in the other room. You hear juicy sounds of blood and guts. And that's when Todd and behind the camera is just like, holy shit, this is really happening. And Taylor kind of freezes up because hearing it is totally a different story. I think this is why it's different from The Librarian. Like they're hearing the butchering.
Yeah, you're right. That's actually, that's like, another good call.
The Librarian was a quick and done.
And they were outside. I mean, they probably got on camera, but they weren't as close and personal as they are now.
This is next room.
This is a long, I wrote kind of drawn out scene, but what ultimately happens, Andy, is they decide to bail out. Yeah. Leslie sends them on their way. He's sad.
He comes back in, but sees the looks on their faces.
Yeah, and he's like,
everyone out now.
Yeah. And he's like, you gotta realize something. I have a job to do. I've set this up. I'm gonna do this with or without him.
You have a look. Taylor's like, what look? He says, the we can't just stand here and let this happen look.
Yeah.
He takes off his mic. Yes, he says, leave. He's like, I'm either going to wind up dead in hiding or arrested tonight.
So this is where the conversation
is. We were going to say goodbye anyway, so let's say goodbye now. And he says, just leave and let me finish doing this.
So this is where Taylor decides to re-edit the story. She tells Todd and Doug that they need to help those kids, let them know what's going to happen. And, you know, of course they're like, well, didn't he tell us not to fuck around? She's like, I don't care. You know, I'm not going to invoke this. So cool, Andy, right here. Because they put down their mics.
She grabs the camera and says, documentary's over.
And then it turns into
like
a movie.
A movie.
We're watching
for the rest of it.
Yes, yeah. The rest of this is now a movie. They are now a part of the movie. They're in it.
Which is another reason I thought this was really cool.
No, it was cool.
They go from outside observer to part of the story.
Because now the movie, because we're getting towards the end, it moves quick. And I love it because they put down, they're focused on, you know, now the camera's focused on Taylor, Todd, and Doug. It's a great switch.
Right. We see Doug and Todd
they're
for the first time.
They're on camera.
They're
characters. Like, yeah, they're a little skeptical of
Todd's
going against
Leslie.
Yeah. Todd's a big boy.
Todd's
Doug,
a bigger boy.
Doug is kind of looks like a Shaggy, you know, with a goatee.
With a lazy eye. And
yeah. And he's... right then, I kind of knew. I was like, even when he was talking to her throughout the movie, I mean, I think he has like a little crush on Taylor, but they're scared of going against Leslie. They know what he's capable of. And again, Taylor says, well, I want to edit his story.
Taylor's like, we know the plan. We can save her. We can save these kids. We can save Kelly.
They take off into the house, the dark house where...
the lights have gone out, so we know that Leslie's in the basement getting ready to kill the two who come to the basement to check the fuse box.
Yeah, because... because Kelly's not there, they don't know where she is. They ask where they're like she went upstairs with
the stoners.
Some guy.
The stoners are
only there. They're the only ones there, and they're like everyone's kind of.
She's upstairs with that Shane guy.
They go upstairs,
and Kelly's riding Shane's dick like a fucking rodeo.
Pro
guy, yeah.
A pro
Todd's
rodeo
like,
rider.
Todd's like, that's no virgin I've ever seen.
And this isn't her first time.
This is not her first time, yeah.
So this is when it's like, what's going on with the story, Andy?
Kelly and Shane like, holy shit, who are you guys? And they stop having sex. Everyone gets back downstairs, and Taylor's trying to contain him. Like, hey, you know, there's a man here. His name's Leslie Mansuko. He's going to kill you. He's trying to kill you, Kelly, because he thinks you're...
Kelly's like, why?
Yeah, you're...
I'm
not a virgin. And the lights come back on, and Taylor's like, it's too late. He's getting, I think it's Pete and Lauren are in the basement.
Yes.
And we hear Lauren scream. Like,
yep.
Pete's dead. And Lauren comes running upstairs. Oh, my God, he killed him. It's the guy with the mask. Exactly like Leslie said was going to go down. So now they're all in the living room like, holy shit, what do we do? Pete's dead. Taylor explains to Kelly about, you remember when you were taking out the trash? Saw a guy. You thought you saw a guy. And then you were at the library, and that guy killed the librarian. You remember that? He's real. He's a real guy. They look out the window, and there he is. He's standing out there with his hand scythe.
And now he knows.
Kelly passes out.
Yeah. But now what's scary is that Todd and Doug bring up the point like...
He fucking saw you.
Taylor, did he see you? And
yeah.
Yeah.
Fished, yeah. The cat's like, out of the bag.
This is something he did not want us to do.
So what do we do? How do we fuck him up? And Todd or Doug says, like, we find the kids upstairs. The kid, if they find the bodies upstairs early, then they'll run out of the house before Leslie wanted them to. So,
yes.
All right, everyone, let's go upstairs. And they go into that bedroom and it's totally clean. There's no bodies.
There's no blood.
There's no blood. There's no bodies. There's no nothing.
So he changed sheets. He did something to where it's like,
wait a minute. How come the bodies aren't here? What's happening? And they go back downstairs. They're like, ah, shit. Let's.
Leslie had planned this internally.
Yeah. Yeah.
He had planned this.
He did.
He wanted Taylor and her crew in the story. He knew that Kelly's not the final girl.
Right.
What kind of what kind of final girl virgin rides the nerd's dick like a pogo stick? You know, like, it's like, so that's when you start, Andy, that's when I start going,
Doug, wait. Doug's like, well, we're off plan now. And Shane, the nerdy kid, tries calling out. I'll just call for help. No service.
No service.
Typically happens. They realize Leslie is adjusting the plan. Taylor's like, he's adjusting the plan to accommodate for the extra people in the house, i.e. us, Todd, Doug, and me. The stoners, in the meantime, since the bodies weren't upstairs in the bedroom, the stoner kids went to look for them. And Taylor's like, holy shit, we got to go get the stoner kids. They're looking in the tool shed. They're going to get killed. And the two stoners go into the tool shed, and yeah, they get killed.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of cool that, you know, Leslie's kind of sitting there like a scarecrow, or like, you know, like a dummy, you know, like a mannequin or whatever, and he's like, hey, look at this, man, it's a scarecrow.
Dead.
And then it's just a real quick kill of the other stoner, but it's the foreshadowing moment where if someone else discovers the shed, a body, they're going to get a post-hole digger to the heart, to the chest, and they do, and so it's kind of a rad scene. I guess if that was my honorable dick kill shot, honorable dick kill shot of the week, it's he puts the post-hole digger into the chest of the second stoner,
pulls
out his heart and lays it in his hand.
Lays it in his own hand.
Very creative.
And Taylor looks on, screaming. It's no! So, back in the house. Everybody get back in the house.
Yes.
The nerdy kid Shane's like, all of our tires are slashed. All of our tires are slashed on our cars. And Todd says, he's really good. Like, he's like in a bad way, but he's really good. And Doug questions why Kelly passed out, like you said. What's next? They're supposed to find the bodies and go to their cars, but they can't because they've already gone to the cars and all the tires are slashed. Taylor says, but our van is fine. Let's go to our van. So they go out to their van, and inside the van are
the couple from the bedroom.
The first couple to get killed.
First sex couple.
Wrapped up in a blanket, and they're naked, and they're wrapped in a blanket, and they're dead. So they discover those two bodies.
So they're like, holy shit, what's next?
And they can't start the van.
They're like, well, he didn't plan us. It's something that he didn't think, what he didn't plan on. They're like, what didn't he plan? What did he plan? Us running back to the house. So they run back to the house. So if Kelly...
They go upstairs, too.
Yeah. And so what they're really deciding is, like, if Kelly's not the final girl, the virgin, what's the story behind this night?
Yeah, she's not a virgin.
Kelly tries, is like, well, I'm not a virgin. I'm getting out of here. So she breaks the window from the second floor.
Yep, and tries to climb out.
Yeah.
But it's a branch that's been pre-cut.
Yeah.
And it breaks, and she falls to her death.
So Kelly is now dead.
And they all run out of...
There goes that theory.
Let's run out of the house. Where the kids run towards the barn.
Yes.
And let Todd and Taylor run a different direction. And Todd's like... I'll see you guys around. Have a nice summer.
But when,
I'm going to run over here and distract him.
Yes, and that was... So it's kind of like that moment where it's like, I'm going to give my life away.
It's a sacrifice, yeah.
So as he's running off, Todd's running off, he's asking Leslie to chase him.
You got
to
chase me.
You person, you human specimen.
Nobody gets away. Maybe chase the doughboy.
Yeah.
You human specimen. I think Todd is a man crush on Leslie. You human specimen.
Yeah, that's what he called you. Yeah, I thought that really was such a weird thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Todd idolizes Les.
But eventually, Leslie
Chase the Doughboy
catches up with Todd.
Todd gets stuck in the mud, remember?
Yeah.
Because the apple orchard mud is like blood.
Blood, yeah. I didn't understand this. He pleads with, I thought it was really because he is not Leslie anymore. He's like, come on, dude, I know you.
It's me. It's Todd. Les, together till the end. Come on.
Yeah. Nope.
Leslie kills him.
And the next, we just have the party girl.
Isn't that another trope somewhat that wasn't pointed out? The person who sacrifices themselves to try to distract the killer? It happens in a lot of movies.
Oh, I know, but they never really tried
to... They never covered it, but here it's happening. It's unfolding here.
But, oh, so the story is behind they usually know the killer, the person that sacrifices himself? Does that make sense? Like,
yeah.
He's sacrificing himself, but in a way, he also thinks that if I do get caught, I can plead with him. Like, yeah. He's my buddy. Like, yeah. we've hung out for a few days, you know? Like, we
didn't work.
Did not work. So what we have left now is the jock, the party girl, boob party girl from downstairs.
Lauren, Shane, yeah. Taylor, and Doug.
Taylor and Doug. So they're all in the barn. And I guess...
Trying to figure out what's going on.
This is when Taylor realizes that she's the virgin.
They realize Taylor's the target.
Yeah.
And she's been the target. Taylor starts laughing like he planned this all the whole time. Even before we started shooting the documentary, he planned it.
He had already picked her out.
This has all been a target to get Taylor. Yep. And this is where, for me, I kind of saw it coming, but this is where the movie, I was like, fucking genius. This is awesome. It's like a twist. An M. Night Shyamalan type twist.
An M. Night Shyamalan twist. This is like if this movie is like if M. Night Shyamalan and Chris Hansen directed a movie.
Taylor and her crew, but mostly Taylor, have been the target the entire time.
They
and
hear something from outside. Todd grabs a shovel, thinking it's going to be our killer. He whacks
him on the head.
It's Dr. Holleran.
It's Dr. Holleran coming in to try to save everybody. And Doug... knocks him out accidentally.
And this kind of freaks out our party girl and jock.
Yeah, Lauren goes, climbs up in the hayloft. She gets killed because Leslie's up there with a couple of, like, ice hooks.
Yeah, ice hooks. Good call. Kills her. Hay bale hooks.
Yeah, kills her. And Shane climbs up, too, but he gets in not really a fight. It's a one-sided fight. Leslie punches him, beats him a little bit, wraps a rope around his neck, and pushes him off the hayloft. But in the struggle, Leslie falls off the hayloft too and appears, you know, knocked out on the floor.
Yeah, this is kind of where I wrote that the character development of their kids, like the Leslie, the Laurens, and the, like, you knew their names, I didn't. And I didn't really take time. It sucks because
they were supposed to be cannon fodder.
Yeah, but they are actually do become part of the story, and I feel like within this podcast, they can get lost. Yeah. Their character development isn't due. But that sounded really cinematic.
The real group has been Todd, Doug, and Taylor this entire time. Doug tries clearing away a pile of hay bales, but Taylor's like, no, he's planned all of this. And he's right, because as he pulls away a hay bale, the dead bodies of our two stoners are there.
Yep.
So Leslie knew they were going to try to get out
that
way.
Discovering bodies. I love that.
Yeah, he's more or less like herding them in a certain direction through all the bodies. Leslie gets the jump, or he's on the floor and he sort of wakes up, as always happens with the killers, and he goes after Doug and Taylor, but that's when Dr. Halloran comes to and says, Leslie, stop. And Leslie and the doctor have their quick face off, and the doctor gets stuck stabbed in the side and falls over. Doug tries to help Taylor escape out of the feed chute, but he turns and he's just like, you're gonna have to go through me.
Because I think he like I
love her.
Yeah, that's when you hear him say, I love her. I'm in love with her. You're gonna have to go through me. Easily taken care of.
Yeah, Leslie just pushes him against the wall and knocks him out.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like he's got that super strength. I mean, because he's been working out.
And Taylor slides down the feed chute out of the barn into the apple orchard. And
this is where I wrote.
She runs to the tool shed, opens it up. Todd's body's in there. And she's like, sorry, Todd. Grabs a weapon. And it's going exactly as Leslie said it would. Exactly in his plan earlier. But instead of Kelly doing all this stuff, it's Taylor.
Love it.
So she's now in the orchard, takes off her shirt.
She's all like, let's go.
And she's got her white tank underneath, you know, and turns all badass. And just like happens, she gets Leslie's walking, following her as she's running through the apple orchard, just like he said. I gotta look like I'm walking while you're running. And they face off. She gets a hit in on Leslie, but of course the axe breaks when she turns her back, and when she turns around, his body's gone. And she gets to the cider house, the cider pressing house him.
Yeah, because that is something that
that's the end.
The end, where he even talked about like the apple press in the movie, kind of a moment in the earlier in the movie when it's kind of a foreshadowing moment.
Yeah.
Like where they actually turn apples into cider.
She said, what's going to happen? He said, well, I don't need to explain to you the imagery of apple crushing, do I?
Yeah.
Somebody's going to get hurt is what he says.
Yes.
And she hides in the cider house and Leslie comes in. We now have Leslie's point of view looking around for her, and a big hook on a rope comes swinging out of the corner and knocks him down. She tries to, you know, get the drop on him and punch him a little bit, but he's stronger. They struggle. Ultimately, Leslie's on top, choking her.
Yep.
And what happens, Nick? She reaches slowly for his weapon, his scythe that's, you know, holstered on his side, pulls it out, stabs him in the side, gets him enough, gets him up into the apple press, and crushes his head into place, holds it in place.
But it's held. He can't escape, but he's not full, you know, he's not fully... His dead. Head's fully not crushed to death yet, but he does make one final plea. He
pulls off his mask.
Pulls off his mask and makes one final plea. What makes one final statement, I should say, and he says, "You were always the one.
I knew it. I knew you're the one.
Yeah, I knew you were the one. You were always the one. Blah, blah. Yes. I love you." What a...
She gives it one final turn.
And while she screams like that.
Yeah!
And of course...
She pours gas all over the place and lights it on fire.
Sets the bar on fire. Doug and Dr. Holleran appear.
They're not dead, thank God.
They embrace
just
her
injured.
And walk her to safety as the fire erupts.
Doug's like, "Is he?" And Taylor goes, "I don't know what he is." And Doc, "He's just a man. He's just a man."
And
we roll credits over footage of an autopsy room.
And I knew what was going to happen.
The attendant, and while Psycho Killer by the Talking Heads plays.
Yeah, Psycho Killer.
Qu'est-ce que c'est? And so this autopsy attendant, or, you know, ME, whatever he is, rolls a stretcher out of the cooler.
Burnt body.
Burnt body. He uncovers it. He goes back to do a little paperwork on his clipboard. The body sits up on the stretcher. And we go to black. That's the end.
That was a trope from hell right there. I love that. It was great. Yes.
So often. I loved it all.
I mean, that was really, I remember, from Friday the 13th. You know, there's always been morgue killers. The morgue, you work at a morgue in a horror movie, you're going to die.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I remember that, like, it happened, like, Jason and a few of his movies where he'd wake up in the hospital or wake up in the operating room or wake up in, I think, in space, he woke up in a space lab.
Yeah, so, woke up underwater.
Yeah, I mean, like, you just wait. But, like, really in the morgue and, like, when you're getting the autopsy done, I mean, like, I got a character for you. You're going to play in my horror movie. You're going to play the autopsy doctor. Or you're going to play the morgue worker.
Listening to your Beats by Dre while you...
While you eat like a sandwich.
Yeah.
Like, while you eat a sloppy Joe.
Always.
And you haven't shaved for a while.
Yeah, because he's working third shift.
On a scale of 6 glasses of apple cider to 10 glasses of apple cider, what do you give this? Oh, real quick. Those glasses of apple cider have semen in them.
Son of a bitch. I was about to say, what a calm scale. What was it, 3 to 6?
Six to ten.
6 to 10. This is high for me.
Yeah,
I like a solid 9 or 10. I mean, just maybe it loses some points because there wasn't a lot of gore.
Yeah.
But
and, you know, some of the...
The creativity here, the holding up a mirror to the whole genre and pointing out all the things that happen so much in all these other movies, I loved it.
I got one for you. This is the first one for me, a first.
Mm.
For slash you, for Nick Bankhead.
Okay.
For co-host Professor Nick. It was a great movie for me. I would highly recommend watching it. This is the first time I ever got nervous talking about a film because there were so many intricacies. We're so used to talking about movies where a killer just runs around and stabs people to death, and we laugh about it. But this one actually had, like you said, some creative writing to it. I felt like this, and you really did tell a great story because
in the middle
there. You could just get going. Yes, exactly.
But he was long conning her the whole time. Yeah. As he was telling her in the interview, here's how it's going to go down. And he's explaining everything that's going to happen. The stoners will be stoned. The jock and his GF will go upstairs. I'll kill them. He explained all that. He knew that Leslie and Todd and Doug were going to get involved and they were going to be part of it. He planned for it. He knew it all from the beginning. And he knew that by telling her his plan, he was helping that to happen as well. It's almost like he's a time traveler and he could tell this is if I do this, this will happen.
No,
it's
that's
so crazy.
But I mean, it sets up the story too that every great killer, Jason, Michael, Freddy, it lets
Batman.
Us know.
Yeah. They've said, given enough preparation, Batman versus any other comic book character, Batman wins.
Well,
given enough preparation.
You have something for Batman.
Well, who doesn't?
I don't. No, I'm just kidding.
But he's coming for you.
Aquaman.
What?
No, I'm just kidding. But what I'm getting at is that by setting this up, though, it lets us know that Jason, Freddy, Michael, they all had plans. They were all so, like, he learned from them. So the story where all these kills that happened, like, Jason had planned them out.
Mm-hmm.
He had planned out that, they're going to be sleeping in a tent, so then I'll be able to bash them. I'll be able to wrap them up in a fucking sleeping bag and bash them against a tree.
You
still
have to
one
know,
of the greatest kills ever.
You have to know enough about human behavior, too. You know that these are hormonal teenagers who are going to try to sneak off and have sex, they'll be easy targets. Like, you know that.
I would have done a lot then. Back well, when I was a kid.
I think that it's also important we watched this movie or this type of movie at this point in our little podcast career. If this was like the second or third movie we ever watched,
yeah,
you wouldn't have this huge bank of past movies that all have the same through lines and
we
the same
would know,
things.
Yes, we you're know right.
So, but we've seen so many things and the same type of stuff. The two teenagers going off to have sex and get killed first. And the guy who says, I'm going to sacrifice myself. You go. That happens in a lot of movies, too. I mean, all we have all that in our background. And now here we are watching this one.
It definitely made a lot more sense. I hear what you're saying. But yeah. I again... It's a very different from what we're usually watching. I mean, usually it's a comedy horror. This definitely had some horror elements to it, but it definitely gets a little bit. It makes you. It's a really great movie for horror enthusiasts.
It is.
Why don't we go ahead and get into the kill count? Okay. I'm kind of interested in this one.
All right. Yeah, because we're coming up on an hour 15 here. So we have our librarian. She was the first one. Just like he said, the red herring, the librarian, first kill. And then I didn't count any of the kills in his, like, aside, like in his interview, like, here's how it's going to go down, because all those were kills imaginary.
Yeah.
So the actual day of, it's the two teens at the beginning who sneak off to have sex. Then followed by Pete down in the basement when the lights went out, followed by our two stoners. And then Kelly, who we thought was the virgin target, climbed out the window and fell to her death. The only one really not killed by Leslie here, because she just fell like a moron. And then Todd, come chase the doughboy, you specimen. Lauren, party girl, who fell off the hay, or she got hooked up on the hayloft.
Yes.
Then Shane was the nerdy kid who was having sex with Kelly. He got hanged. Doc Hollering didn't die. Doug didn't die. Taylor didn't die. So that's 10 who actually died. And we didn't. Yeah, Leslie didn't die. We know that because that's what happens. So 10 kills in Behind the Mask.
That is awesome.
The Rise of Leslie Vernon. Do we know what we're doing next?
No, why don't we come back and talk about
it? All right, be right back. And we're back.
And that was the rise of Paul Vernon.
Leslie Vernon.
Leslie Vernon. Same thing. Hey! Jeez.
We took a break for like 6 hours there, Nick. Yeah.
Well,
you
I
fed
wanted
me dinner. It was delicious.
You
Thank
to
you.
See my special place.
Had a bottle of wine. It's very romantic. Now we're back.
We're back. Hey, it's March. It's spring break.
Yeah. Spring break season.
So Andy and I thought we would go back to campus. We're not going to let our students go on spring break without taking a little of campus life with them. Mm-hmm. So we have decided to do one of the classics from the 90s, Urban Legend.
1998. Yes. A college student suspects a series of bizarre deaths are connected to certain urban legends. I mean, our target audience probably has seen this movie.
Tell your friends. If you're one of our four listeners, go tell your friends that this one's going to be a good one because everyone has seen this Urban Jared Leto. Before Jared Leto became a fucking weirdo, this was when he was actually, you know, maybe a little sweeter.
Yep.
Sweeter, you know, on the tooth.
Available on Amazon Prime. Probably other.
Jody's going to love that we're watching this one. This will bring her back.
So it'll get some
probably
traction.
Some good music. I'm excited.
We were going to go like a St. Patrick's Day direction, but
yes, that's what took us so long.
They're all like supernaturally.
And I don't want to do Leprechaun.
No.
There was one we found St. Patrick's Day from like
2021
that looked really good.
It can't stream it anywhere.
Can't stream it, but
that one looks really good. So.
It looked like, you know, they even made a reference to 80s slasher. So anytime that happens, that is cool. Hey, don't forget, if you're anywhere near the Midwest in September, come visit us at Horror Fiesta. We're going to be setting up a booth and talking everything slash you.
Yeah, down in Peoria, Illinois.
Peoria, Illinois. We're going to start soft. Yeah. We've got some, there's going to be some great actors there.
Yeah.
Guy who played ambulance driver in CSI Miami will be there. I think he brought that up. Cracked me up.
Yeah.
So anyway, we'll have more to talk about. I know we're running a little, not bad, but I am excited for Urban Legend. I hope you are as well.
Yes.
And guess what?
What?
It's time to say goodbye.
Yes, class dismissed, everyone. Have a great week.
Bye.